Welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I am your host, Tony Serino, and this is your daily dose of all things Steelers. Today on the show, I am joined by Christopher Carter of DK Pittsburgh Sports, a football analyst for them, doing his weekly War Room column, a film breakdown column. I want to get him in. Of course, we haven't had him on since before the season started. We had him on the Friday before the opener, and so much has changed since then. Of course, back then we thought of this team as being a title contender, and certainly, you know, one of the teams in the class of the AFC, right? One of those the best teams in the AFC. And of course, since then, this team has gone 500 through 5 weeks, and a lot. I think the outlook has certainly changed for this football team, and so I want to get him in to kind of tell us what he's seen so far through the first 5 weeks. We'll talk to Chris today on the podcast. Also want to talk about the fact that Mike Tomlin did get fined for his comments that he made on Sunday about the officiating, not just in these Steelers games, but around the NFL. And then we also have our first practice report for Wednesday's upcoming game. Who practiced, who did not. We'll talk about that today as well. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Tony Serino. You can find more of this podcast by going to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, search Locked On Steelers, and you will get your daily dose. You can follow me on Twitter at Steeler Country. Find us on Facebook, Locked On Steelers. Remember to join the Facebook group. Lively conversation there throughout the week and definitely on Sundays during the game. And you can also find us on our new Instagram page, Locked On Steelers on Instagram. And let's start today with some news and notes. The biggest news of the day, Mike Tomlin was indeed fined by the NFL for his comments he made on Sunday at his post-game press conference when he called out the officiating. Called the officiating a joke. And again, I don't think he was just talking about the officiating against the Atlanta Falcons in that game against the Falcons. I think he was talking about officiating in general. Of course, he had talked during his Tuesday press conference a couple weeks ago about how the amount of flags that are being thrown, you know, are just too many. And as a fan trying to watch the sport, it's just getting tougher and tougher to watch with so many flags happening on so many plays. And so, you know, he called the officiating a joke. He said, you know, the kinds of penalties that are being called are costing players jobs and teams games. And I think he was right on all of that. And yet the NFL doesn't care. They're going to fine him $25,000. Anyway, remember, Troy Vincent talked to him afterwards. And Troy Vincent said, look, we're usually pretty lenient in these cases, you know, with post-game press conferences and all of that. But the NFL not lenient in this way. They did fine him the $25,000. I think the NFL should take what Tomlin said to heart. I mean, regardless of the fine itself, they need to take what Tomlin said to heart. And again, this is not just some random coach saying this. This is Mike Tomlin, a member of the competition committee, a member of the committee that is coming up with the new rules, coming up with the new emphasis for the season. And for him to come out and say, we have gone too far here. The officiating has gone too far. That, you know, this is a joke. That's what the NFL needs to take out of this. Not the fact that he, you know, he said this publicly and he shouldn't have done that, all of that, right? That to me is beside the point. They need to take what he said to heart. We are in 2018 about to set a new record for the most accepted penalties, or we are on pace to set a record for the most accepted penalties in a single season. And again, it comes in the same year where offensive play is just, you know, again, it is a monster offensive year. And I get that for the NFL, that's fantastic. But I'll tell you what, as a fan, especially as a fan of defense, it's just not as fun to watch. And I get that, you know, I might be in the minority on this one, but, you know, I think what Mike Tomlin said was absolutely right, and I hope that the NFL takes it to heart, because the officiating in the NFL this year is at an all-time low in my eyes. And then let's get to the practice report for today. Some good news and some bad news on this one. I think more than bad news, it was just expected news. But let's start with the good news. Terrell Edmonds, full participant in practice. He was good to go, even with that calf injury. He was good. Seems like Terrell Edmonds should be good to go on Sunday without any setbacks. And then Vince Williams, who had a hamstring injury that kept him out of Sunday's game against the Atlanta Falcons, he also participated fully on Wednesday. And so again, barring a setback there, he should be good to go as well. And that is good, because both Morgan Burnett and LJ Fort did not practice on Wednesday. Morgan Burnett still down with that groin injury. As I said earlier in the week, I don't expect Morgan Burnett's actually going to play against the Bengals. That was never going to be the case. He's missed so much time with this groin injury. It seems to be a nagging groin injury. You know, again, he sat out so much time during the preseason and training camp. Spend as many weeks as it takes. And again, with the bye week coming up, you don't play him against Cincinnati. You let him wait till after the bye week to see if he's healthy. But again, with Edmonds being healthy now, cool. I mean, Burnett can sit again, and they'll play Davis and Edmonds, and then they'll play whoever they want to in the dime. And I think this week it was a lot of Cam Sutton in that spot. But again, you know, the Morgan Burnett thing, it is what it is at this point. I think Morgan Burnett is an injury-riddled player that is injury-riddled when he's on the Steelers, par for the course at this point. And then with LJ Fort, disappointing that he wasn't able to go. with that ankle injury. I think he had a great game against the Falcons. I'd love to see if he were available. I think the Steelers found something in LJ Fort that they haven't had, which is a true, you know, passing down inside linebacker. Hopefully he can be, you know, maybe limited on Thursday and then, you know, get full participant on Friday. I guess that's probably too much to ask for, and you're probably likely to see him after the bye week. But boy, he was so good. I'd love to see him out there against the Bengals. And then Darius Heyward-Bey also did not practice. He has that ankle injury that kept him out against the Falcons. It seems like he'll also be sitting out this week against the Cincinnati Bengals. Again, that ankle injury looked bad when it happened, and so I'm not surprised to see this might be a multi-week injury for Heyward-Bey. Very good on special teams. Again, less so a factor in the offensive game plans, especially with guys like James Washington now getting so many reps and then Ryan Switzer being brought into the offense. Heyward-Bey at this point has just been a special teams guy. Still hurts to not have him out there, although I think Brian Allen did a very good job on special teams in place. So we'll see Heyward-Bey likely after the bye week as well. Before we continue, I want to let you guys know about Swap.com. Isn't it crazy how much we pay for new brand name clothes? Wouldn't it be great if there was a place to discover awesome discounts on gently used clothes? Well, there is. It's Swap.com, the world's largest online consignment and thrift store. Stop driving to store after store, sifting through racks, when you can easily sift through millions of clothes in seconds on Swap.com with their easy-to-use filters to find just what you need. With Swap.com, you can save up to 90% off retail price in your favorite brands like Carter's, Nike, J. Crew, and Gap. They have quality, hand-inspected items that are added daily, and if something doesn't fit, you can enjoy hassle-free returns within 30 days. We have a special offer for listeners of Locked On Steelers. You get 35% off select items for your first order with promo code Locked On. Plus, you'll find new deals every day on Swap.com's homepage. So go to Swap.com. Remember to enter the promo code Locked On at checkout for 35% off select items on your first order. And then let's get to my conversation with Christopher Carter of DK Pittsburgh Sports. I do want to apologize. The connection during parts of this podcast got a little weird. There are some drop-offs here and there. You know, the voice gets a little robotic. I apologize. Especially early on, you're going to notice it. It gets better as it goes, so kind of bear with it a little bit. I really apologize for it. We'll fix it the next time we have him on. But just kind of bear with it. Bear with it in the beginning. It gets better as this interview goes. But here it is, Christopher Carter of DK Pittsburgh Sports. And let's bring in Christopher Carter of DK Pittsburgh Sports. He is a football analyst for them, doing his weekly film breakdowns on his weekly War Room column. Chris, welcome back to Locked On Steelers.
Thanks for having me back, Tony. Always good to be here.
We're just about a third of the way through the season so far. We came into the season, of course, with such high expectations. Mm-hmm. The Cleveland opener, of course, a tie against Cleveland, and then the Kansas City game in week two, kind of a shock to the system. What's been your general impression of this team through the first 5 weeks?
Just that they're a work in progress. I think a lot of people don't realize that with a lot of the things that are going on this year are still new. A lot of the guys are still very young. And you really got to see a glimpse of that against in this Falcons game with how certain things started to click that people hadn't seen before. And people were like, well, where's that been all season? And you're like, well, there's a reason. A lot of these guys are younger than 25 years old, and 25 itself is still very young in the NFL. And I think a lot of people look how I can play a good or bad performances based off of how guys are playing together.
And so let's talk about that Falcons game, because I think that was an interesting game, right? Mm-hmm. And the Steelers have been poor defensively through the first 4 weeks in my eyes. But that game the Falcons, I think it turned some eyes, because, you know, only holding them to just 17 points, the Falcons didn't have the kind of success that the Chiefs did, that the Bucs did, at throwing the ball down the field. I came away from that game wondering, was that game more about what the Steelers defense did or what the Falcons offense didn't do? It felt like the Falcons were maybe a little too passive in that game. They didn't really test the Steelers down the field. Was that something that the Steelers brought to them schematically that forced them to go underneath, or you think that was something the Falcons came in and saying, this is a poor tackling team, we can do kind of yard after catch, that kind of thing?
I can tell you right now, a lot of it was because they were coming after the Falcons, especially Matt Ryan. We had Chris Bradford from DK Pittsburgh Sports, one of our beat writers. He went in the Falcons locker room while Dale and I went in the Steelers locker room. And he said when he saw Matt Ryan, he was limping around. Like he was really beat up after this game. And a lot of that is because the Steelers just kept bringing it. Even I think they had 11 quarterback hits in the game. I'd have to go back and look at the exact stats. But I remember that I was like, oh, my goodness. I know they had 6 sacks, but they killed him all game. And when you hit a guy that many times, as people have seen with Tom Brady in Super Bowl games, you become a different quarterback. And I think Well, yes, the Falcons could have played better. They could have had a better game. A lot of it was because there was good coverage downfield. And I'm telling you, that's the one thing I love about being in the press box, Tony, is when I can see the safeties, the stuff you can't see on TV right away, and you're like, "Where was the guy open? I don't know." But I was looking, and I was like, "Man, Mike Hilton's there, Sean Davis is there, Terrell Edmonds is there." Like, if Matt Ryan was going to force balls into situations, he was going to have to force passes into tight bracketed coverage or good single man coverage that was not easy to beat. There were not the open receivers running downfield like we saw in the Chiefs game and in the Buccaneers game and in the early part of the Ravens game.
Yeah. What's been your impression so far of Sean Davis? That was a big question mark going into this year, is how would he make the transition to free safety? Doesn't feel like he's been, you know, terrible so far, but not great either. What's been your impression so far?
I think he's still finding his feet. I think he really did a good job this week because he gets to see everything in front of him, Tony, and I think that's pretty special. Because now he's starting to understand what it's like to be the guy that's in front of it. Instead of being the guy that's staying back and making sure, okay, I got to help this person, I got to go there. And that takes time to adjust, but he's getting there. And I talked to him after the game in the locker room against the Falcons. And, you know, he was just saying, he's like, you know what, one thing we did really well was we were flowing to our spots. We weren't confused. We were communicating. And whenever adjustments were made, there weren't as many conflicts in what we were talking about, and that was a huge factor for him. I thought was pretty funny at one point I told him, "Hey man, you know that James Conner had more receiving yards than any of the Falcons wide receivers?" And he was like, "Wow, like that's a pretty good stat. I gotta get the cornerback something nice." And Mike Hilton was standing 3 feet. He's like, "Excuse me, what'd you say, man?" He's like, you better hold up to your bargain. You put it out there now. It was a funny exchange.
That's funny.
I think Sean Davis is really developing the continuity. And one thing I wrote about this about 2 weeks ago, I want to say, on DK Pittsburgh Sports. But if you look at the middle of this defense, it's almost entirely new. The only mainstay you had was Vince Williams. But Sean Davis is now a free safety. He's playing a whole new position. Morgan Burnett and Terrell Edmonds are both new guys. John Bostic's a new guy. LJ Fort's a new guy. It took the Steelers defense the last time when they had Shazier and Mitchell and Davis, it took that crew several weeks in 2016 to get up to a point where they could be consistent. I think just the same thing is expected of this group. The only difference is that they're still going to be missing the super playmaker, but even without the playmaker, it's going to take time for them as a defense.
And then, you know, I remember talking to you during training camp. You were really high on LJ Fort, as was I. He finally got his chance this week.
Yep.
I felt like he had a great game. What did you see out there?
Oh, man, he was all over the field. I think he played 27 snaps, and he was around the ball almost a one for every four plays he was on the field, which is astounding. And part of that, I think, was, one, he flows to the ball very well. But, two, I think the Falcons also said, hey, that's like their fourth-string linebacker. Yeah. Let's go get him. And he was not having it. I mean, one of the biggest plays I thought of the game was the third-down stop. He's covering Devontae Freeman. It's a Texas angle route. He cuts outside, cuts inside, and he's expecting to get that separation from Fort. Fort doesn't deny him the ball, but he challenges the ball and tackles him immediately. And that stops the Falcons, and they have to punt from inside their own 20 late in the second half. I thought that was a huge play in the game. And that's just a factor that they don't get with anybody else on their roster now at middle linebacker.
It's something the Steelers have really struggled with so often, is covering those running backs on the over the middle like that. Now, going over to the Steelers secondary a little bit, and specifically the corner situation, the Steelers have had a problem opposite Joe Hayden. They have this rotation now between Artie Burns, Cody Sensabaugh, Cam Sutton's been in there.
Right.
In your eyes, who is the second best cornerback on this? Or who is the right fit at outside corner opposite Joe Hayden?
It's still Artie Burns. Artie Burns, I mean, the biggest, I keep telling people, his biggest opponent is himself, because there are times, I think, even beyond the mental mistakes, when he makes a mental mistake, you can see it sticks with him, it bugs him. And that's when you start to see more, he compounds upon it, because he's like, man, he's putting it on himself. And that's when you see his demeanor sort of change. That's when you see him start to build, hey, here's a good play here, here's a good play here. He keeps his head up. And I think that's a huge statement to how young he is. I think he's, what, 23 years old right now, 24 years old maybe. But that's just part of the immaturity as far as, well, not the immaturity, but the youthfulness in him, is that he's going to have, when he has those moments, he's going to react to them. And part of being a professional is learning how to erase what happened before, good or bad, and come to the next place saying, I'm going to give everything I got. And I think when he gets that, he'll still there. He'll get there, but still he's the best athlete out of the guys behind Hayden. And I think he still possesses the best natural cover skills, because I'm telling you, the way he flips and turns his hips when he sees what's coming, especially if the play's in front of him, that's when he's at his best. The biggest thing, I think, he needs to get out of his own head, and he needs to do better when the play gets behind him and he's playing a ball that's over his head.
And then transitioning to the offensive side, you know, the defense hasn't played well. The offense at times hasn't played well, especially to start football games, to end football games, second half. That, again, those weren't the case against the Atlanta Falcons. They got off to a fast start, and then, you know, they continued scoring in that second half. I asked this on Twitter the other day. I want to ask you, what was a bigger deal on Sunday? Getting James Conner and that running game going again, or finally getting Ben and Antonio Brown, that connection going again? Which to you was a bigger deal?
I was listening to your show and you brought that up, and I was thinking he's going to ask me this question. I had to go with James Conner, because it's in the first half, it allowed the offense to click. Because I mean, you look at that first half. I was breaking down Ben's stats. I forgot to bring that notepad with me that I wrote this down, but I was breaking down Ben's stats left and right. He was 2 of 4 to the right side of the field, but he was 6 of 8 down the middle. And part of that, I think, is just him figuring out whatever's going on with his elbow, because he mentioned that was a problem coming into this season. And I think he's still figuring out how to throw the ball. The good thing is that he's seeing where he's supposed to throw the ball. He's just not getting it there, and he's not throwing the right ball. And I think I heard you talk about this as well. Matt Williamson mentions this a lot on his show. He's a local guy from JohnClayton.com. But this connection problem isn't a connection problem. It's not Antonio Brown. It is purely Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, I agree.
Antonio Brown's getting open against even good cornerbacks like Ron Alford and Desmond Trufant. And Ben's just not getting him the ball in the right spots to get it to help him make plays. And I think you saw, Tony, and tell me if you agree with me, when he completed that first touchdown on the quick out to Antonio Brown, and you see Ben Roethlisberger just grab his chin snaps and just unsnap him.
Yeah.
I think that's when it clicked. And he's like, all right, I can do this. And then that's when you saw him start to fire more zip passes. And then he had the 47-yard bomb, and he was enthusiastic after that play. But I think it's just a purely a confidence thing. But I think it took James Conner being able to take the pressure off the offense for that to open up. So that's why I say that James Conner would be more important, at least for this game, for his ability to open up the offense and let that sort of gel into the game.
In your eyes, why haven't we seen more of James Conner, right? There was this report from Jason LaConfora, it was a couple weeks ago, that said there are people within the organization that feel like the Steelers are throwing too much and not running the ball enough. But then you look at the stats, especially early in football games, and James Conner was averaging somewhere around, you know, 1 or 2 yards a carry early in football games. And then, you know, you have this idea of the Steelers just getting behind so early in football games that, you know, they're not successful offensively. Then they're down by 7, 14, 21 points, and they're getting away from their... Why do you think Conner has been so limited in his usage and his effectiveness early in football games?
I think part of it is one, you know, the obvious answers that everyone talks about is being down early and not being able to get the ground game going. But I also think they're still trying to figure out how he gels with this offense. My article that'll be up that's up today on for Thursday is that we're talking we're looking when I looked at all of his runs. And I say this literally because I have a whole notepad that I've been doing, but I was breaking this down on. But I counted between his 84 carries so far this season, 43 of the times he didn't have a lead blocker. And in those 43 carries, he had 93 yards, but that was roughly about like 2.16 yards per carry. Horrible average. You cannot run with that.
Right.
On the flip side, when he had a lead blocker, and that's either Roosevelt, Nix, or any of the linemen pulling and then allowing him to follow them and shoot up a gap, that was 41 of his 84 runs were that for that situation. 239 yards. That's a 5.83 yard per carry average.
Wow.
Of his 25 missed tackles that Pro Football Focus said he had. Pro Football Focus came out with a number. They said he forced 32 missed tackles so far this season. Now, missed tackles can be a subjective stat, because you can say, oh, well, that was a miss because he made this guy turn, but it wasn't this as a tackle. But I think he is so much more confident as a running back when he sees a guy that he can follow and say, all right, there's my gap. I'm shooting up it and I'm running hard and I ain't scared of nobody. But I think that's the difference. It's not necessarily that the Steelers aren't able to, or, you know, that the Steelers aren't, you know, are trying to stay away from the run. I think that they're looking at it and they say, look, we're not succeeding in this way. Let's get the ball to our playmakers as fast as we can. But I think a lot of this is just finding the best ways to make him work. And I think that if they pay attention to how he's succeeding, they're going to see that he plays much better with a guy in front of him. And if they use those strategies, I think you're going to see a lot better numbers from James Conner.
And then let's go to the offensive success that we saw against the Falcons. Yeah. Because, again, it was just so much better. How much of that was the Steelers kind of like finding this rhythm through James Conner and, you know, finding an offensive attack versus, and I know I sound like a pessimist here on both offense and defense, but, you know, they were going up against a very depleted Falcons defense. How much of that plays into this as well?
I'd say it's like a 65-35 in favor of the Steelers finally executing more consistently on offense. And I said this going into the game. The Falcons missing Deion Jones, Grady Jarrett, Ricardo Allen, Keanu Neal. That is the entire middle of their defense. And that's why I started paying attention to where Roethlisberger's success was coming from in the game, because I said if he targets the middle of the field, he's going to have success, because not just because it's easier to throw there, but because their middle defenders are gone and they're relying on backups. And that's a lot of what this defense depended on, was having those in the middle of the field. Now that he's going to be able to pick that apart. Now in the second half, you saw he came out with his first pass to Antonio Brown on that slant over the middle. He zipped it right in between a linebacker and a cornerback. And I was like, okay. And then he finishes that drive with the touchdown pass to Antonio in the out route. I think that's when he started to feel it. And that's why I still say they get credit for it, because they still had to make really good plays. And I give the Falcons this kind of credit. They were really gutsy with the way that they were coming out. They were lining up single coverage on Antonio Brown the entire first half. I mean, they were showing one high safety with Ron Alford or Desmond Trufant over Antonio Brown and just saying, hey, Ben, come throw at us. Please come throw at us. And they're just banking on that he would not beat them. And for the first half, on fire, and then it took over. So that's why I still say, you know, the Falcons aren't your prime defense that can say, oh, well, that's a huge achievement for the offense. But still, putting up 41 points, well, really 34 points considering the, you know, the defensive touchdown. Sure. Putting up that many points in any game, that's a win.
And then, so we're 5 games in now to new offensive coordinator Randy Fichtner's tenure as offensive coordinator. How do you think he's done so far?
I think he's doing really well, because I was writing about this with how Mason Rudolph and Josh Dobbs were performing in the preseason. And when I looked at it, I saw, like, man, like, they're seeing the field. They're not just going to a designed location every play, which is something that I would see out of Landry Jones for years under Todd Haley. And that's unfair to Landry Jones, because he only got this year to work under Randy Fichtner, and he barely played in the preseason.
Sure.
But when I see Ben Roethlisberger, a lot of these misses are simply misses of mechanics in his throwing. He still makes times where he's dropping back, not seeing anything, and just saying, oh, I'm going to chuck it here. I mean, those types of plays have reduced, I think, dramatically over the past year. And I think part of that is because Randy Fichtner is like, look, we're not just going to attack vertically. We're going to attack horizontally. We're going to spread people out. We're going to give you options and progressions to roll through. And not that Todd Haley didn't do that, but I think Todd Haley had a bigger design in his offense to say, look, we got Martavis Bryant streaking down the field. If there's single coverage, you go there no matter what. And I can't say that's officially what they were doing, because they would never divulge that much of the offense to a writer unless the seasons were over and everything was broken up. But my estimation has been that Randy Fichtner saying, look, we're giving you all these options. Take what's in front of you and take the easy throws if they're there. And I think that's made a huge difference for Ben Roethlisberger. And I think when he starts clicking with that arm, Tony, it's going to be a whole different ballgame for this offense.
Yeah, I think one thing that gets lost in the fact that Ben has not had a great start to the season is he had an even worse start to the season a year ago. So in that way, I think you're right. The Fichtner offense has helped him a little bit. All right, so they got this big game coming up against Cincinnati. I know you're an X's and O's guy, so this might be a little blasphemous to say, but it feels to me like this game is just as much about physicality and who is the more physical football team as it is scheme and game plan and all of that coming in.
Oh, yeah.
Give me your thoughts.
Oh, man. Well, part of the X's and O's is the physicality, because when you look at the X's and O's, certain O's are a little bit more physical than other O's, and certain X's are a little bit more physical than other X's. So that's absolutely And that's what's going to this game's going to come down to. We know the Steelers have historically run the ball well against the Bengals. Yeah. But here's the thing. The Bengals know that as well. So when this team comes into Cincinnati and they're in Paul Brown Stadium and they're trying to set the tone, they're going to need to find ways to get James Conner into space. Let him run hard. Let him get shots at one-on-one with linebackers in space and see how he performs. Can he make people miss like he did against Atlanta? And that could lead to major results, and that I think will help set the tone, because also the Bengals are a team like the Falcons with good cornerbacks on the outside. Drake Kirkpatrick and William Jackson III are two guys that I highly respect as cornerbacks in the NFL. And while I do think the Steelers, they've had success against these guys and they can continue to have success against these guys, I think if they soften up the Bengals with the ground game, with forcing safeties to have to leave those guys in single coverage, that's the key to success, to get those big plays to open up and to give Ben Roethlisberger easier throws to make in this as he figures out his funk.
I agree with you. I think James Conner last week was terrific, but this is a game where we really need him to be to be that kind of player. I think he had a Le'Veon type performance last week. He was, the whatever 50% of that offense, but they got to have that against Cincinnati as well. All right, fast forwarding to the bye week. Le'Veon Bell slated to return, of course, according to reports from ESPN, and even I think Le'Veon has said it himself. He's reported to come back. Before we get to that, do you think that there's any chance he gets traded? The Eagles have Jay Ajayi injured now. Are we beyond the whole Le'Veon being traded thing?
I just don't see much of a chance of that happening. One, because the Steelers know what it's like to not have two running backs that you can depend on. It be based off of recent playoff performances. When Le'Veon Bell's gone down and D'Angelo Williams went down, and they had to rely on Fitzgerald Toussaint in key playoff games and almost pulled some games off with him. And they did pull off the Bengals win with him. But point being, they know what it's like to be in that situation. They know that Stephen Ridley isn't the answer for this team. He's a good spell guy right now, but I really see the future, at least for this season, being sort of 2008-like with how Le'Veon Bell can be Willie Parker and James Conner can be that Mwelde Moore. Not necessarily the guy that you depend on, but if you put him on the field as a spellback in certain situations, you're having Bell whenever he's hurt, he can deliver for you and deliver those big games. And one of Mwelde Moore's best games ever was against the Bengals in Paul Brown Stadium.
Interesting. So you think when Le'Veon comes back, this is my next question, when Le'Veon comes back, let's say Le'Veon comes back and he looks like Le'Veon. It's not going to be week one, but, two weeks into Le'Veon's return, right? He looks like Le'Veon again. The Steelers would never take him off the field previously, right? The last two seasons, Le'Veon's got 400 touches easily. In your mind, given the success that James Conner's had, are you taking Le'Veon off the field at times to put James Conner out there?
Yeah, I'll mix it up. It depends on what I'm trying to do just to try and keep people off balance. If I feel like I got a pitch that'll work, I might put James Conner out there just to give Le'Veon a break and also to see how he does in practice. And that's something that I'll be tapping Dale Lawley for all of that week. Is like, hey, Dale, how does Le'Veon look in practice, man? I do think that they have a real situation on their hands where it's, one, evaluate how Le'Veon Bell's performing behind this offensive line. They're developing that chemistry with James Conner. They've had that chemistry with Le'Veon Bell. It took a little bit to get that back. I think it would be foolish if they force themselves into either situation. You have both. Come out. If James Conner has the better week in practice, if he's doing really well when he's been running really hard and he's broken a few tackles, you can see him sort of like, hey, get him a breather, then get Le'Veon Bell in. But on the opposite side of it, if Le'Veon Bell's looking like your better back, start with him. If you run, say you run 30 times a game, make it so it's like Le'Veon Bell 20, James Conner 10, or if James Conner's leading the way for you and he's having a great game, make it James Conner 20, Le'Veon Bell 10-ish. I'm sure they wouldn't do that right away, but because I think they'll want to get Le'Veon Bell on the field, and I think it's going to be more of a 66% of the way going to Le'Veon Bell. But if James Conner's still rocking, I don't think there's any way that they just yank him out from the offense entirely.
I think it's going to be really intriguing because, I agree with you. I think that's the right mentality to go in is, start the better guy. But, boy, the Steelers have been just so unwilling to take Le'Veon off the field at times. It'd be very fascinating to watch when he gets back. All right, we'll leave you with this one. The Steelers are 500 after 5 weeks, 2-2-1. They've at times this year looked like, you know, they're back, and then there are times this year they've looked like they could go 5-10, or 5-11, 5-10-1, I guess it would be. In your eyes right now, with the way this team is playing, is this a playoff team?
Yes, I still think this is a playoff team. It's never really fallen from my mind, because when I look at this team, I know it's like, listen, this is Tomlin. You know, their team, sometimes they struggle in September, then they get better in October, they're really good in November, and then even better in December. And I think that's a testament to how this team does coach, because they come in and it's like, look, we have new evaluations every year, we have new players, we're trying to develop different things, moving pieces, and they find so many different ways to establish different identities with this team, whether it's a ground and pound team, whether it's going to air you out, whether it's a blitzing team on defense, whether they're going to try and stop the run. You know, a lot of these things, I think, just build over time. I think that's where the emphasis needs to be. If you're a Steelers fan out there and you're sitting there right now and thinking like, man, I have no idea where this is going, to give yourself a level of comfort, go back and look at how these seasons have played out. I always point to people, go back to 2016 when they were 4-5, they had just lost to the Ravens and the Cowboys. Everyone said the defense is dead. No one, they can't cover anybody. They can't stop anybody. And then they win 9 games. I just think that's a major factor that you have to consider, is that this team always finds ways to rebound. They did against the Falcons. If they can find a way to get into this bye week with a 3-2-1 record, one, for the AFC North, that's a problem, because the division champions stumbled out the gate and none of you stomped on their heads and put them out of their misery. There's no team that's the Patriot, the traditional Patriots right now in the AFC other than the Chiefs. And again, we can't bank on them. I think that's a good sign, Steelers, is that can get hot. Say they're coming in 3-2-1 out of the bye. That gives them what? That's 6 games. They have 10 games left. Say they win 6 out of those next 10 games. That puts them at 9-6-1. I can see a lot of teams not getting to 9 wins or getting around to 9
right
wins.
Around there.
And that half game gets them above. Exactly. And then right around that, I just think there's going to be a lot of battling and sort of like SEC style, we knocking ourselves out of the playoffs because we're too good to compete against each other. And there's not going to be that 13-3, too many 13-3 teams like we saw last year with the Steelers, the Patriots, and the Jaguars right behind them. So I think they're in a very good position still to control their destiny and handle their business. And who knows if they're able to establish a lead over the Patriots, they beat the Jaguars later in the season, they can still get a home game at Heinz Field and maybe even a bye week.
All right, Chris, love having you on. Let people know where they can find your work on the internet.
My name's Chris Carter, everyone. Critiques on Twitter, but I am the NFL analyst for DKPittsburghSports.com. That stands for Dejan Kovacevic, the mastermind behind the organization. Come check out War Room, our weekly post-game analysis where we rate every player, every department of the team, go over the film, go over the scheme. We interview players. We have the video of those interviews. And then we have Carter's Classroom teaching you even more about the game every single week.
All right, hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. Again, I apologize for the audio quality issues, especially early on in that conversation. Tried to clean that up as best I could, and hopefully it didn't take away from the conversation in any way. I hope you guys enjoyed that. All right, that'll do it for me today. Thank you all for listening. If you want to leave feedback, SteelerCountry@gmail.com is the email address. You can follow me on Twitter @SteelerCountry, and I'll be back tomorrow for more Locked On Steelers.